I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today in the show, we are going to do, we're going to have kind of an updated discussion on the Codex Sinaiticus debate. Interestingly, a dear friend of ours, David Daniels, with Chick Publications, has for some time now, I think for about a year, maybe 2 years now. Well, it has been about 2 years. David's been investigating the entire Codex Sinaiticus controversy. Initially, when he saw tares among the wheat, I know from our discussions he was initially skeptical because the information was yet very new information for a lot of people. Of course, it's not really new information at all. It's the real history of what happened when the Codex Sinaiticus was first discovered, first in 1844, and then the portion. You had the 43 leaves discovered in 1844. It was in 1859, years later, some 15 years later, when Tischendorf discovered the New Testament portion. That's when Sinaiticus turned the world of biblical scholarship and textual criticism upside down, as it were. And upside down not in a good way. Because that is really, in my opinion, my assessment of it is that it is the declaration that Codex Sinaiticus was or is the world's oldest Bible, the oldest complete copy of the New Testament, is really what they mean by that. Sometimes people will very loosely call it the world's oldest Bible. What they mean is the oldest complete copy of the New Testament, where you've got from Matthew to Revelation. Now, of course, there are additional books that appear in the New Testament, namely the Shepherd of Hermas and then the Epistle of Barnabas. Those two works are, in a nutshell, the most significant, the most powerful evidence, once you understand them, that points to the almost certain reality that Codex Sinaiticus is not really of ancient origin, but was created in the 19th century by Greek paleographer Constantine Simonides. Now, a few years ago, when I had my debate with Dr. James White, and interestingly, I still have people who contact our ministry, send me emails or will call, and they've listened to that debate online. And those who have followed the subject matter and can keep up with the details, because there's a lot of details, they realize that James White simply had nothing. I mean, he really just did not have any salient arguments, any legitimate arguments against the story of Simonides. The arguments that he presented were just not significant. They don't go anywhere. It was more of a, you know, not wanting to give up the tradition of believing that Codex Sinaiticus comes from the 4th century, which is what the vast majority of biblical academia believes to this day. Now we've had a growing movement. There's no question it is a subcultural, you know, or a sub-mainstream, independent, you know, the independent biblical underground, as it were, movement of researchers and a number of PhDs. I'm counting up all the PhDs right now. We've got at least 5 of them from my count. Let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, there's about 5 PhDs that I know of who have come to the conviction that Codex Sinaiticus was, in fact, engineered by Constantine Simonides. One of them over in the UK has written a book on this already called The Forging of Codex Sinaiticus. Because if you look into the details of this, you know, what really began to convince me, and as I've said before, brethren, when I was working on Tares Among the Wheat, initially I had scripted out, or at least I had the outline, for the section on Simonides, and I accepted the very short, brief, however incomplete and at times inaccurate histories that were given of Simonides, that he was just this con man, this forger, who was creating all of these forged manuscripts and trying to sell them in London and this kind of thing. And then he claimed he was the real author of Codex Sinaiticus at one point. And I accepted those very shallow, superficial representations, really misrepresentations of who Simonides was initially. And so I had the sequence worked out. I had actually ordered, I remember, because there's one of the stories that's given is that he supposedly took rusty nails and would soak them in water. Presumably, the impression you're given is that he would, you know, take these rusty nails, put them in water, and then use that rusted colored water to stain the parchment that he was writing on. So to age it, to make it look older and this kind of thing. Now, I hadn't really researched the details of the story of Simonides, and I'll never forget, I was trying to type this thing up and whatever, work up the narration for it, and I went to type in that Simonides was a convicted forger, because I kept trying to figure out, okay, how do we know that the guy was a forger? He was a forger because of what, how was he exposed as a forger? And so I had read somewhere that he had been convicted of forgery, been taken to court and convicted of forgery. Okay, so I decide, let's go get the details on that. I begin to look that up. And this happened when he was in Germany at the University of Leipzig. He had been accused of being a forger and trying to sell a forged manuscript, etc. Then you go research the details. And come to find out, Simonides was never convicted in a court that I found of forgery. In fact, he was taken to court and accused of trying to sell a forged manuscript. But then the judge threw the entire case out because the accusation against him was completely bogus. And you can read about that in the book by J.K. Eliot, Codex Sinaiticus and the Simonides Affair. You have to read the section, I think it's toward the end of the book, when he gives the biography of Simonides, and the details, if I remember correctly, are given in that section. But, and of course, it's given from Simonides' perspective, his whole arguments. But according to the available records, he was never convicted of forgery. So then I'm chasing down, well, wait a second, now they didn't tell us this. And then you go and you read the sections where they're talking about, well, what was his motivation? Why would he claim that he was the real author of the Codex Sinaiticus? What? And then you, somebody says, well, it's very common. They will tell you that he wanted revenge against Tischendorf because Tischendorf had exposed one of his forgeries at the University of Leipzig. And so he wanted revenge against Tischendorf. You say, okay, well, what was the forgery that Tischendorf exposed? Oh, it was a copy of the Shepherd of Hermas in Greek. Simonides, apparently he was trying to sell a copy of the Shepherd of Hermas, and these scholars, they bought into it. But Tischendorf showed up at the last minute and exposed the entire scheme as a forgery. And so Simonides wanted revenge against Tischendorf. Yeah, then you find out that the Shepherd of Hermas, that was the alleged forgery, was not really a forgery. You find out it was not really a forgery. Well, how do you find that out? Well, because Tischendorf changed his mind. He, as Philip Schaff puts it, he retracted his former objections in 1863. Why? Well, the alleged exposure of the forgery of the Shepherd of Hermas happened in 1856. And you have to remember, when Simonides presented this copy of the Shepherd of Hermas in 1856, it was the only known copy in the world, in the entire world, of the Shepherd of Hermas in Greek. That's why the scholars at Leipzig, two scholars named Anger and Dindorf, they were so elated, they were so excited that here now they thought this book, this work, the Shepherd of Hermas, that was an early church manuscript, one that was embraced by early believers. Of course, many others believed, and today we believe generally that it's not inspired, it's not accepted as an inspired work. However, it was a well-known work in the ancient church in the early centuries. But nobody in the West had ever seen a copy in Greek. They had the Latin, but they believed that the Greek was lost to history. Now, this Greek scholar, see, they'll call him a forger. They won't tell you that he was Dr. Constantine Simonides, that he was a paleographer, that he was seen as a rather brilliant individual in the field of paleography and in Egyptology, although that gets us into a different area. His work in Egyptology, I believe, and I'll say this on a side note, the understanding of hieroglyphics as they're understood and how they're translated and interpreted today in modern times, if you were to go and read the explanation that Simonides gave, because he argued that the leading Egyptologists in the 19th century were wrong, and he explained why. And people back then believed his explanation was really rather brilliant. In a nutshell, they said, well, where did you come up with your interpretation of interpreting the hieroglyphics? And Simonides' response was, well, it's not my interpretation. It's an interpretation from the ancient world. And then he explained where he found it from. And of course, because Simonides has been so completely denounced and just trashed in the academic world, they've just utterly rejected him as this phony forger, everything, all this other kind of stuff. Nobody's ever taken the time to go and investigate things like that. There's a number of things that he talked about that I thought the academic world should investigate. One of them is his interpretation of hieroglyphics. But anyway, so back to the Shepherd of Hermas. The Shepherd of Hermas, in 1856, when he presented it, it was the only known copy in the world. Anger and Dindorf began to publish it. Then Tischendorf shows up. He says he believes it was really a forgery, that it's not really ancient. He doesn't believe Simonides forged it. He said he believed it was a medieval forgery created in the Middle Ages by others for who knows what reason, but that it was not as ancient as it appeared. Now, Simonides then debated the point with Tischendorf. And he said, no, Tischendorf, you're wrong. Your problem is that you are basing your understanding on the Latin copies of the Shepherd, and you don't realize that the Catholic Church has corrupted the Latin copies of the Shepherd of Hermas. And that's why you're drawing these conclusions, but the Shepherd that I presented is in fact genuine. Well, Tischendorf was the big scholar at that time at Leipzig, and so in the Western world at that time, people accepted Tischendorf's judgment, and they rejected that of Simonides. So Simonides ends up leaving, and he goes to London. All right, let's go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this and the Epistle of Barnabas right after this.
Battling spies, assassins, and wolves in sheep's clothing. A Lamp in the Dark unfolds the fascinating history, the Bible, and the lives of the saints who fought to preserve it. A Lamp in the Dark is an epic documentary, a powerful witnessing tool for church and Bible study groups around the world. Share with your church, your family, and friends the untold history of the Bible today. Now available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
Noise of Thunder Radio.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we are talking about the Codex Sinaiticus. I started to talk about David Daniels and his research into Codex Sinaiticus. I've talked to David a number of times about this. I think it's actually very exciting that now here we have another researcher. And of course, David Daniels has an education background. He went to Bible college. He went to Fuller Theological. He learned enough about Greek. He's got a working knowledge of the language, from what I understand, from our conversations. Now, of course, those of you who have seen Bridge to Babylon, you know that we interview David in that film. And his interview is very powerful. And him talking about going to learn linguistics training at SIL, the Summer Institute of Linguistics. Now, I don't want to spoil what he says in the documentary, but he gives a very, very powerful testimony about that whole experience. But I didn't realize until I interviewed him that he had this kind of background. And it really gives a lot more credibility to the other things that he says. But he has been researching the Shepherd of Hermas and the Epistle of Barnabas and so on, and this whole Simonides issue and controversy, and has become more and more convinced that, in fact, the Codex Sinaiticus is a 19th century production. It is not of ancient origin, which is very important, brethren, because so much of what modern academics, when they're telling you things like that you shouldn't believe that the last 12 verses of Mark are genuine, they're getting that. Where are they getting that from? They're getting that from Codex Sinaiticus, and with it, the Codex Vaticanus. But you have to understand, nobody would think twice about Codex Vaticanus if it were not for the Codex Sinaiticus. And this has been admitted. Read the testimony of J. Neville Birdsall in the book, The Bible as Book. Look for that book. If you want to get some really interesting details, if you're willing to read through some rather dry academia, but it's very interesting, detailed stuff, where you've got guys from the British Library, you've got Dr. Scott McKendrick, he's one of the authors in that book. It's all based on a symposium they had on the Bible. But J. Neville Birdsall, a leading paleographer and Bible scholar from the 20th century, worked with guys like Bruce Metzger, etc. Birdsall says that Vaticanus had virtually zero impact on the New Testament and really biblical scholarship at all prior to the discovery of Codex Sinaiticus. And it was only with the discovery of Codex Sinaiticus that the idea of this, that the identification, he says, of the manuscript family, the Alexandrian manuscript family, could now be identified. And of course, I believe my theory in all of this, based on the available evidence, is that the engineering of this Alexandrian family was contrived. It was invented. That this was deliberately done to undermine the received text. That's what I believe. And again, you watch Tares Among the Wheat and you will get the many reasons why when you see so many details, so many things that are not talked about, that are not discussed. People talk about Codex Sinaiticus all the time, but the history that they will debate and discuss is an invented history. It's a history of this being a 4th century manuscript. There's very, very little discussion about anything that went on in the 19th century especially the controversy between Tischendorf and Constantine Simonides, or any of the claims made by Simonides or his friend Kallinikos. Kallinikos, who was a Greek Orthodox monk, who knew Tischendorf, who had met Tischendorf and spoken with him on multiple occasions, according to his own written testimony that was sent into the newspapers, and it was published. But the thing, I'll never forget researching this the first time, and I'm reading this in the paper. This Greek monk is sending in these letters saying that he knows Tischendorf, he's talked to him on multiple occasions, and he's really refuting the story that Tischendorf told, and basically saying that Tischendorf's story about finding the first pages in a rubbish basket in St. Catherine's, so that's not what happened. Now, Kallinikos doesn't mention that. What he does is he says, here's what happened, that the volume had been bound. It was a solid volume that was bound. And according to another monk named Gabriel, Tischendorf had checked out the Codex, which was the work of Simonides, according to Kallinikos, checked it out from the Treasury Department, and he removed certain pages and did not put them back. And it was only because the librarian had fallen ill, that's the only reason Tischendorf was able to get out of the monastery with those pages. And so Kallinikos basically says that Tischendorf stole the pages back in 1844, and that he had written to Simonides about this. Of course, the Codex at that time did not have a name. I mean, Simonides always called it Codex Simonideos, or Simonideos, however you would pronounce it, but essentially taking credit for the manuscript himself. And then Kallinikos wrote to him, and Simonides even presented copies of the lithographed letters that he had from Kallinikos years earlier. This was part of just multiple pieces of evidence that were presented by Constantine Simonides in the 19th century. He named multiple witnesses who could all testify that he was the true author in one way or another, and yet all of this was dismissed as, well, these are just the fabulous tales of some con man and a forger, etc., in spite of the fact that Tischendorf changed his mind about Simonides' Shepherd of Hermas back in 1856, entirely because when he examined the second copy of the Shepherd of Hermas that he found as part of Codex Sinaiticus, and he examined now the second copy of the Shepherd of Hermas, and he compared it with the copy that Simonides had presented, they matched. They matched so well that Tischendorf changed his view. That's what changed his mind, because he found a matching copy of the Shepherd of Hermas as part of Codex Sinaiticus. Then we found out, after we finished Tares Among the Wheat, after we finished Tares, and all that controversy was going on, and then I had the debate with Dr. James White, etc., then we discovered that Simonides had also published a second work, the Epistle of Barnabas. Now, here was a work, portions of Barnabas had never been seen by scholars in the West. Portions of Barnabas in Greek had never been seen by scholars in the West. Those unique portions show up as part of Codex Sinaiticus in 1859. Then come to find out, Simonides had published a copy of the Epistle of Barnabas in 1843 in Smyrna, and it was a review of it was published in a newspaper called The Star of the East in Smyrna. And when you compare the Epistle of Barnabas, well, Dr. James Donaldson in 1874, I think it was, he did a work called The Apostolic Fathers. You read that work, he does an analysis of the 1843 edition by Simonides of the Epistle of Barnabas, and he compares it with the Epistle of Barnabas in Codex Sinaiticus and says they are virtually identical. He says this about the Shepherd of Hermas and the Epistle of Barnabas, both books. And this is the detail that we bring up in Bridge to Babylon. Now you have two very unique books that are not found anywhere else in the world, and Simonides published editions of them before they were, before matching copies of them were discovered as part of Codex Sinaiticus in 1859. Is that all just a coincidence? There are many of us who simply think, no, that's not the case. That the evidence, the overwhelming circumstantial evidence, points to the very real probability that the true author of Codex Sinaiticus was, in fact, Constantine Simonides. All right, brethren, we are out of time. That's it for us today. That's our show. We'll stop it there, but we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.